All right. Our study outline on Satan is entitled, Who is Satan? Who is the Devil? And we want to, if you want to just look ahead a little bit and find a passage that you'd like to read, when we get to that verse, we'll ask you to go ahead and pick it up. Rather than, as we normally do, try to get a lot of helpers lined up in advance. When we look at Satan, there are a lot of different words or a lot of different descriptions for him. The word or the name Satan occurs 36 times in the New Testament, as you'll see in your sheet. And as you think about where this word occurs, it seems to me to be significant. Why do you think he really starts to pop up? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. I mean, you do see references to him elsewhere in the New Testament. You also find some references to him in the Old Testament. But why the concentration? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. Trace?
Isn't he afraid of Jesus?
Yes, you've got this controversy really kind of coming to a head now. Sin's been in the world for a long time. Jesus is now ready to come into the world. So as the great force of righteousness arises, you would also expect that that great force, Satan or the devil, is also going to arise. So the conflict really becomes comes to a head, if you will, in many respects. And then Christians begin to go out and spread the gospel, and Satan tries to interfere with them. The creature is referred to in a lot of different ways. And as you look at some of the ways, you see here with the various descriptions some things that give us some insight to his nature. First of all, devil. Now that word on the face of it may not seem to be very descriptive, but it is. Anybody want to take a shot at, I mean, it's easy to look at him from the standpoint of a dragon, serpent, the wicked one. But let's start with the first two, devil and adversary. Devil, what would we associate with that word? Anybody want to take a stab at that? He's the devil. What does that mean? All right, he's obviously not going to be on the side of right. He's going to be wicked. Accuser, slanderer, the enemy of God, the enemy of man, kind of a general description for him. The second description that we have for him is a little easier to define. He's our adversary. What's that mean? I have an adversary. What's somebody saying? All right, there's an opponent. There's somebody that's against me. And again, it may not be a great foe, it might be one, but that word in and of itself doesn't tell us how bad he is.
Enemy.
All right, he's an enemy. He is not going to be a friend. So when we look at those two, we have a pretty good idea of what he's like. And then we come to that third one. He's compared to a dragon.
Before you go to that, the word devil here, is there any connection between the last four letters, evil and devil?
Diabolos would be the Greek word for that. I'd have to go back and really do some looking, Ray, to see if that's by chance or if there actually is a connection there. That's a really good observation. But when you take off the D, you're left with evil. So even if there's no linguistic connection there, just that observation is really good. So that's very observant. When we come to that third one, dragon, what comes to mind there? Hey, Glenda. There's just some sheets in the back. What comes to mind when we see the word dragon?
Powerful.
I think that's one of the things that we'd have to pull out from that. Anything else? What about dangerous? I mean, when you think about a dragon as we've typically defined that, we've got the images of the fire-breathing dragon and so forth. That's not a creature that we want to have in the backyard. So when we look at devil and adversary and dragon, and then if that's not enough, what would come the fourth point? He's also compared to a serpent. Now, there's some people who like snakes. I'm not in that category. But, even if you like snakes, are there not some snakes that you're going to be very cautious with? The guys that handle the rattlesnakes, the guys that, keep snakes. Sometimes they do, business. They're snake sellers and so forth. Very slippery, very cunning and so forth. And then, the Bible also makes it clear that he's the wicked one. Jesus, you may remember the parable of the tares in Matthew 13, verses 38 and 39. He compares the field to the world. And as you think about that comparison, the Lord essentially says, there's this big field, there's the world. And do you not have seeds being sown in the world? Well, yes, you do. Some of the seeds are being sown by whom? God and his people, and other seeds are being sown by the devil and his world. Well, that leaves you with a very interesting place, doesn't it? Imagine going out there and you've got your farm ground and you're planting some junk seed, some bad seed, and you mix that in with good seed. your field's going to look, you know, kind of speckled, right? You know, you're going to have, well, you know, got some good stuff over here and some bad stuff over here. Well, this is precisely what we see when it comes to our world. Okay, I hope that some people have looked ahead a little bit, and let's see if we've got somebody lined up for Matthew 12, verse 26. Stan, you had a thought before we read the verse.
Please. The idea of sowing tares, it's my understanding that there's an additional thought there, and that is this thing that is referred to as tares was very, very similar
yes.
to what they were planting, and therefore it's not only that he just was creating confusion and problems, etc., but he's being very deceitful about it.
Yes, tares are really bad wheat. And when you go back and you look at that, as far as what was being sown, they looked identical. They come up and you can't tell that this is good and this is bad. And that's why in that particular teaching, you know, as Jesus was asked about it, he said the harvest is going to be at the end of the world. And that's where everything's going to be sorted out. Because with this particular product, you just couldn't tell until it was too late. And if you then determine that it's bad wheat and you start tearing it up, you're going to grab the good with it as well. So yes, that's it. Exactly right, as far as one of the things that needs to be brought out from that. Okay, our passage is Matthew 12, 26. Betty?
And if Satan cast out Satan, he has divided against himself. How shall then his kingdom stand?
Okay, now this is an interesting passage when you compare it to what we talked about just a couple of minutes ago. Satan has what? He's got a kingdom, doesn't he? All right, now if you think about that, you've got an adversary. You've got an accuser, you've got a slanderer, you've got an enemy, you've got a dragon with the kingdom, you've got a wicked force with the kingdom, you've got a very cunning individual with the kingdom. Well, when you put all those things together, what's that tell you about the devil and his kingdom? It's probably not something to be taken lightly. It's something that we need to give serious consideration to. It is a definite threat. All right, then Colossians 1, verse 13. Tying this passage in, when we think about a kingdom of... you know, we in the world see kingdoms as far as different strengths, different powers. Not every kingdom is as powerful as another. But let's see from what Paul wrote, how much power Satan has. Colossians 1, verse 13. All right, Carolyn. Okay, now based on that passage, would you say that Satan's kingdom is a powerful kingdom? I would say so. Can we deliver ourselves from it? No. So if we need someone to deliver us from his kingdom, that would suggest that it's power that is certainly greater than what we have. And then as he describes it, he refers to it as the power of darkness. Well, when we think about the evil in the world, there is power there. There is a great force there. But thankfully, that power can be broken. All right, then two more, Matthew 25, 41, and then John 8, verse 44. Matthew 25. Who's got that one? All right, Molly?
Then shall he say also unto them on his left hand, depart from me, cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels.
Okay, do we know how many angels the devil has? No. But you do get the impression, I think, when Paul talks about spiritual forces in places like Ephesians 6, he lists different groups. So... it's big enough where Satan has sufficient forces to actually arrange them in different categories. And you go back a little bit, Colossians 1, verse 13 talks about the power of darkness. So we don't have a lot of specific information, but there are enough general indications to say that Satan has a few or he has many helpers. He's got a lot. And as we said, those tares that he's trying to sow, he's got many, many hands, some spiritual. Some people certainly will join forces with him in this life. Anybody see the picture out in Oklahoma, the Satanists they want to bring in? I don't remember exactly the name of the, starts with a B. Not a word that we hear very often, but it's the picture of an ancient god. It's Satan. He's pictured as a goat head with a couple of horns coming out of his head. And they want to, you know, not very far from the Statue of the Ten Commandments, have Satan's throne. Big chair with the devil at the head of it, and people can come there and, you know, sit on Satan's chair and contemplate various things. You know, you can bring your child just like they would sit on Santa's lap at Christmas time out there in the mall. Now you can come to Satan's throne, Satan's chair, and have your child sit with the devil. Anybody see that? Okay, just three or four of us. So very, very interesting. And when I think about Satan's helpers, I would put those people in this camp, in this category. Okay, anything you want to add or ask before John 8:44 comes up? Okay, John 8, who's got it? Verse 44. All right, Anne? Anybody know somebody they don't trust?
Yeah.
Okay, I think most of us do. And when somebody tells us something, if they're in that category, we say, well, you know, I'm just not quite sure. But I'm not sure that I've ever met anybody or that we know anybody that says every single thing out of that person's mouth is a lie. Now, we may say that because they're prone to lying. But I don't think any of us have ever met a person who every single thing that comes out of the mouth is untrue. But this is how the devil is described. Jesus said, how much truth in him exists? Zero. Now that's a pretty extreme statement. And yet that statement corresponds very well with what we've already seen about the devil. Remember? The devil, the adversary, the slanderer, the accuser, the liar, the wicked one. So when we deal with this creature, we're not just dealing with a bad creature. We're not just dealing with somebody that's awful. But we, and we're going to see this as we look at the goals and tactics next, we're going to see the slimiest, we're going to see the worst, we're going to see evil to a degree that we don't see as we deal with people in this life. I mean, he is as bad as anything, he is as evil as anything could possibly be. There is not a single good, there's not a single righteous thing about the devil. Well, it would make sense then for God to talk about this creature in the scriptures, wouldn't it? If he's this bad and he's out to bring us into his kingdom, this would make perfect sense. And it would also make sense to describe the future of the devil, which John does in Revelation 20, which is, if you're just joining us, we have said that we're going to pick up that information 2 weeks from today. All right, his goals and tactics, unless there's anything that you want to add or ask. Brian, did you have a thought? Okay. His main mission is to afflict, and I think that's an important thing. When we look at society today, and especially when we think about members of the church, do we not often hear somebody say, well, I wonder why God did that to me? We ever hear that? Well, if we're dealing with a very difficult thing, if we're dealing with a painful thing, do you think it was really God, or do you think it may have been somebody else? It's the devil. God's not interested in afflicting his people. There are times where he allows them to be tried and strengthened. But the affliction, that's in the devil's category. But Satan's main mission is to afflict. And then certainly if he can spiritually destroy people, that's his goal. He started his work with the first family, Genesis 3, 1-5. Who wants to take care of that for us? Jeff, thank you. That's Jeff Burke.
Turn back to
the second here. Okay. And we'll also get somebody lined up for Luke 22, 31. Who wants to take Luke 22? All right, Josh.
Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, Yea, hath God said, Ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, Ye shall not eat it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, Ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day that ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods.
Okay, now think about this, the first family. Now it's one thing to look at something that's been going on for a while and then try to change it, twist it, pervert it, destroy it. But when you've got something that's perfectly good, a beautiful thing, and you say, we're going to, initially, with this family, the very first family, I'm going to come in, and I'm going to not only try to afflict it, I'm going to try to destroy it. And that's what the devil did. Did his best to introduce sin into the world for Adam and Eve. What kind of creature is that? You say, this is beautiful, this is wholesome, this is good, and I'm not going to just let this go for a little while and then interfere, but I'm going to, from the get-go, get involved. And I'm going to try to destroy this in the fullest possible way. And future generations, everybody else. That's the devil. That's his business. So when we think about the level of corruption, the level of evil he's involved with, it is literally off the chart. Luke 22:31. Here's a man who's trying to live right, do the will of God. It's Peter. And Jesus gives some insight to Peter that he might not have ever known about. But here's what he says. Who wants to be our helper?
Simon,
or Josh?
Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he might sift you like wheat.
Okay, anybody ever sifted anything? I always used to think that was the neatest thing. Mom got out the sifter, the flour sifter. And what's that sifting process designed to do? We got the lumps in whatever, and it goes to the sifter. What's it designed to do?
Take them out.
Take them out. And if you were one of those, if you were one of the lumps, how would you be feeling as you're going through the sifter? You know, you're being pressed, you're being grated, you're being ground. You know, people said, I'm just being pounded right now. Well, that's kind of the image in Luke 22, verse 31. What's Satan want to do to you? He just wants to keep pounding you. What kind of creature is that? It's an adversary, isn't it? That's the wicked one. That's the one that wants to do evil to us. So when people come along today and say, well, you know, God's just not been very good to me, and I can't understand why God is, you know, sifting me, if you will. We typically don't hear that word, but that's the sentiment that's being expressed. That's likely not God. Now, he does chastise his people if they get off track. There's no doubt about that. Hebrew writer talks about that extensively, as do some other authors of New Testament books. But, you know, this is the devil's way of dealing with people. And yet, some people seem unconcerned about him. And you hear statements like, well, if so-and-so is going to hell, if my relative's going to be in hell with Satan, where do I want to go? I want to go there too. Not if you know what the Bible says about Satan. All right, anything that went out or asked before we go over to Acts 5? Acts 5, verse 3. Who's got it? Brian.
Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep that part of Christ away from yourself?
Okay. Now think about this. As we look at Satan and some of his characteristics, you have here what word that stands out in Acts 5? What's Satan want to do?
Lie.
Okay, he does want to lie. He's the father of lies, John 8, verse 44. And with his way of life, as far as a person's heart, what does he want to do? Well, we had a couple answers there that kind of got jumbled. He wants to fill it. So when you think about the lying, the evil, it's one thing to say, well, let's put a little of that in there. But, you know, sometimes we, as we season food, we say, well, that has too much salt. That has too much pepper. We put on too much barbecue sauce, or we put on too much of this or too much of that. But imagine filling the heart. I mean, just creating it to the point, or helping fill it to the point where nothing else can be stuck in there. Wants to flush out all the good. And wants it to be overflowing with things like lies and all the other bad things that we read about in the scriptures. That's the kind of creature he is, and that's the devil's will for our life. We often talk about God's will for our life. Does God have a will for us? Well, he does. But do you think the devil also has a will? He does. Do you remember from Hebrews chapter 12, I believe it's verse 15, where he talks about the root of something? He says, you beware, because there can be the root of... Well, bitterness is the ASV translation. Some other translations may use the word evil. But he says, you beware, because there can be that root, that start of bitterness. But Satan, if he can't fill the heart, he at least likes to get a root there and put as much evil in the person's life as he possibly can. Anything that you want to add or ask before we go on to point four? Okay. The devil is even willing to use friends and family members, as we see from Matthew 16:23. Steve, you there?
Yes. But he turned and said unto Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not things that be for God, but those that be of men.
Okay, as we think about Peter and his relationship with Jesus, what was Peter's relationship with the Lord? What did he have that some of the other apostles didn't? He was in the inner circle, wasn't he? So here you have one of the people that's closest to the Lord on the earth. And was the devil able to use him? He was. Was he interested in using? Oh, yeah.
Maybe more so than he would be if he wasn't.
Yeah. Satan, he wants the very best tools and resources that he can have. You know, sometimes people say, well, I've got some tools, but my tools are cheap. These are the blue light special from Kmart, if you remember the blue light special days. But if that's what Satan has to use, he will. But if he can get the top-notch tools, that's what he wants to do. Because, again, he wants to fill a person's heart, wants to bring people into his kingdom, and he wants to keep people there. And he's willing to do any, he's willing to use anyone and anything to do it, even close family members. So that means, and you see this today, you have a congregation that's headed in the right direction, elders are trying to do the right job, but there's a problem that comes up with a member of the elder's family. Divorce and remarriage is one of the common ones. And all of a sudden, when that elder's family is involved in a divorce or marriage situation that violates God's will, all of a sudden what happens? Yeah, I've restudied that, and I was wrong before, right now. And some other things. Elders can face pressure in a local congregation. People say, well, you know, we're going to vote with our feet. Either do it this way or we're going to leave. Elders restudy a matter, maybe like instrumental music, and then what happens? We were wrong in the past, and this is going to be the direction. So the devil is very, very good at what he does. He's very persistent. Sticking with the idea of family, let's look at 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5. Who's got it? 1 Corinthians 7, verse, all right, Josh.
Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you.
Okay, Paul is talking about husbands, wives in the context of a sexual relationship between the two. And the point he makes there as far as even in this area of life, human sexuality, husband, wife, will Satan try to use that situation to his advantage? Yeah, he says he will do his best to engage in temptation there. So there is not any facet of life that we can think of. It may be a very general thing, it may be a very personal thing, but the Bible says that Satan is willing to use that even in a situation such as marriage. So he's very, very good at what he does, very persistent, and very, very clever. You think Satan might be even willing to use religion?
He leaves no stone unturned, it seems like, just in this discussion this morning.
That's exactly right. There is not one thing, even if it involves religion. 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 9, bearing in mind the point that Jeff just made. Who's got it? 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 9. All right, Glenda, you haven't called on you yet.
Even theft who is coming. Even theft who is coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders.
Okay. Will Satan use false religion? Yes. And not only will he use false religion, he'll also do his best to offer people false. Well, there's that. Anything else? The lying wonders. What's another word for wonders? Miracles, signs, excuse me, these kinds of things. So, deceit and religious deceit can take a lot of forms. Sometimes it would take a non-miraculous form, or it can take what people would refer to as miraculous. Well, isn't that important? Today, people say, well, I know this is true religiously because I saw it. I received a sign from God. Well, they may have gotten a sign. But that sign, quote unquote, whether it was something they saw up in the sky, or, you know, sometimes people open the Bible to a certain page and say, boy, there's my verse, you know, and that's my sign from God. Well, maybe heaven providentially allowed you to find that passage, and maybe that was from some other source. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at 3B? Okay. 3B takes us to 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 18. Catherine, I thought that was you. I just had to make sure I had the right hand and head. So, 1 Thessalonians 2, 18, when you're ready.
What for would I have come unto you, even I, Paul, once again, but Satan hindered us?
Okay. Now, this kind of brings us to a slightly different dimension. Jeff talked about no stone unturned. So we've been looking at a lot of direct things that Satan can do. But, you know, sometimes people can't reach a person directly. Sometimes it's impossible to deal with something as fully as we'd like. So we have to say, I can't do that, but I can do this. Well, now as we look at 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 18, do we not see that same thing with Satan? If he can't go out there and do things like sift somebody, Luke 22, verse 31, he will say, well, at least I can do what? I can hinder. you. So, you know, you're not going to be able to do as much as what you would normally want to do. So again, there is just no limit to this particular creature. And 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 26 talks about his will for, again, mankind. Who's there? 2 Timothy 2, or Lisa, verse 26.
And they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will.
Okay, anybody ever feel like they've been ensnared or captured in something?
Yeah.
Anybody want to give an example?
Hmm?
All right, conversations, we feel like we got sucked into something, snared in this, and it's kind of like, okay, how do we get out of this? What else?
Sometimes you get sucked into an argument that you weren't even a part of it, but you're nearby, and they bring you in as the third party.
Yes, you feel like you got, yes, that's another great illustration. You got just captured in that, and you're thinking, man, how did this start? Fight. Sometimes people, again, you're in a crowd, and all of a sudden you sometimes see that in TV, and they get ensnared, captured. Anything else?
Yeah, sometimes just a job. You know, you'll volunteer for a job, and a detail may have been left out or whatever.
Yeah. And you say, I didn't expect it was going to be like this. It's kind of like, wow, this was a lot more than we expected. Well, Satan is good about that, too. He's able to ensnare. He's able to capture people. And isn't that how sin works? Sometimes people think, well, I'm just going to do this. It's not going to be that big of a deal. And yet, that little thing leads to a little more, a little more, a little more. You know, maybe it was that first take of a drug, an illegal substance, and people are, you know, at a party, I'm going to give it a shot, and it's no big deal. Everybody's doing it. And then finally, they realize I'm addicted. Stan?
You hit right there on what I was going to say. He actually can capture people by what we call habits.
Mm-hmm.
We get into the habit of something, and it can be as bad as drugs or alcohol. It can be even relatively simple. He'll use whatever he can.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can make the case that Satan would like to go out and just get you day one. But when you look at him, he's persistent enough, again, to go back to what Jeff said, you know, he leaves no stone unturned. So if you're not somebody that can be captured just like that, do you get the sense that he's patient enough to say, okay, not today, not tomorrow, not the next day, not this year, not next year, but before you die, I'm going to get you. Yes, he does. I mean, he is just, he's like the sniper, you know, that's waiting there. He's in the bushes, at least for some people, and he's just waiting for that kill shot. Very, very patient, and that takes us back to what we said earlier. He's the dragon, he's vicious, and he's also the serpent. He's willing to wait for the right moment to strike. Anybody else? Okay. Let's move down then to 1 Timothy 3:7. This is 3C1. 1 Timothy 3:7. Who's got it? I am? Okay.
Moreover, you must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest you fall into reproach and the snare of the devil.
Okay, Paul's talking about elders. Would we say from this passage, plus what we've learned thus far, that Satan wants to ensnare leaders in a local congregation? Sure. Everybody's important. But sometimes when a certain person or maybe a certain group of people can be affected in a negative way. The wave, if you will, might be a little more visible, or it might create some greater difficulties in a local congregation. So if he can snag somebody, you know, could be a Bible class teacher, could be a deacon, could be a wife, the elders, as we see in the context of 1 Timothy 3, he's certainly willing to do that because, again, he wants the most bang for his buck. 2 Corinthians 11:14. Jeff?
And no more.
Okay. You know, there's some things. For example, you know, you're driving along. Remember the stories earlier in the year? People were driving and sometimes the road just opened up. People fell into a hole. The road looked solid. And then all of a sudden, when you're on top of that asphalt, bang, down you go. Well, we can imagine the shock that would be associated with that. And yet, that's kind of what Satan is like. It looks like everything is fine. Looks like there's no problem there. But Satan is able to disguise, to mask himself, his servants, and a lot of his work in such a way where it not only looks okay, how's it look? It looks righteous, desirable. It looks like this is the way of God. So just because something, you know, we live in a time right now where a lot of people, they don't consider themselves religious, they consider themselves spiritual, right? That's that word, that I'm spiritual. Well, watch out. Because 2 Corinthians 11:14 says the devil is able to mask things in such a way where he's like an angel of light. The things seem like they are so pure, so good, and so right. Okay, anybody else as far as a thought or comment? Luke 13 and then Revelation 12:10. Let's get our readers. Luke 13, 16. Jeff? And then Revelation 12:10. Brian. Jeff first.
And not this one, being the daughter of Abraham, whom Satan hath bound to, he's 18. 18 years be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day.
Okay, we've seen cases where people have tried to infect somebody else with another with a medical problem. For example, a person with AIDS. We've seen cases where they try to go out and infect other people with AIDS. How would you feel about somebody that does that? Somebody doesn't like their health and they say, I'm going to give you AIDS. Or I have the ability to give you cancer. Or I have the ability through a bad blood transfusion, they probably can screen that out now, but I'm going to donate some bad blood so I can infect you. How would we feel about somebody that did that to us? Intentionally ruined our health.
Evil.
Well, yeah. We'd say you're evil. You know, what's going on in your mind? And yet, as you look at this passage, what do we find that Satan has been willing to do? Inflict bad health on people. Discourage people. What do you think? Spiritually, bad health can discourage folks? It can. And here you have a person who was bound for years by the devil. So again, to go back, Jeff, his point is probably going to be the best that we hear this morning, but he leaves no stone unturned. If he masks himself as an angel of life, if he's got to deal by bad health, whatever it is, he's willing to do that to destroy people. And then somebody says, well, I want to do what's right. I want to live for God. Revelation 12:10. Okay, now we talked about from Revelation 12 how Satan has lost some of his power. One of the things that seems to have been stripped from him was the ability to accuse God's people. Here's a reason for that. Remember 1 John 1? If we walk in the light, as he's in the light, what's the blood of Christ do? Continues to cleanse us. Well, if you're continually cleansed, how much basis is there for an accusation against you? Well, there is none, right? I mean, if you're continually forgiven, what are you going to accuse somebody of? There is nothing. So again, he's lost that ability, but at least you see him using that in the past with people. And still, he surely has that desire today, but God's able to say, you can't do that any longer. This person is a child of God. This person is walking in the light. And you can't bring up that sin. You can't bring up the things that have been done. Those things that have been purged from that person's record. But imagine somebody that wants to accuse you day in and day out. And they want to accuse you before the very one that can destroy you, that is God. We wouldn't want to have any kind of fellowship. We wouldn't want to have any kind of association with that creature. Because here's the guy, he's always pointing at him or her and saying he's bad, he's wrong, he's evil. Look at all the bad things he's done. And God, he belongs to me and my kingdom. Well, God says you can't do that. Point F, 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. Molly, thank you. Now think about somebody who's trying to figure something out. Trying to figure something out that they really need assistance with to get their life headed in the right direction. And as they're trying to figure, some of us have had that. We've tried to sort through something. We've tried to read through something. We've tried to fix something, trying to put something together. And maybe it's a child. Maybe it's, an adult. I was guilty of this morning, I guess. But somebody's trying to figure something out. Another person comes up and starts asking questions and begins to annoy us. And, we just can't concentrate. We can't figure it out. How do we feel? Well, we're frustrated. We're trying to get this right. And here's somebody who comes up, and maybe they not only frustrate us, but what if they mislead us? They say, you don't need those directions. Here are the directions that you need. And those are the wrong directions. Satan wants to blind the minds of people so they can't have a right relationship with God. How evil is that? That's about as bad as it gets, isn't it? But it takes you back to the idea of Satan hindering people. He wants to interfere with people so they will not find the truth. And that's really bad. Some of his qualities, Revelation 20, Jude 9. Revelation 21 and 2, who wants to take care of that for us? Jeff, and then Bonnie, if you'll pick up Jude 9. Revelation 21 and 2.
And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years.
Okay, a couple quick points here. Number one, when we think about locking something up today, what kind of tools will we use to do that?
Well, here it'd be physical.
Oh, okay, we'd probably say, you know, get a padlock if you've got, you know, a hasp and so forth, or we'd say chain it. That's what we do out here in the parking lot, right? You know, we chain it, so we have that kind of barrier. So when God talks about chaining him, that does tell us that he's powerful. And then you also have an additional detail in Revelation 20. What kind of chain was used? Okay. What other words would you substitute for that? A great chain.
Chain.
All right, heavy would be a good word. Strong chain, you know, thick chain. So again, it's not literal, but it is a figurative way of saying he's very powerful. But the fact that he can be chained in this image tells us what about him? Yes, he's got power, great power, but at the same time,
he's limited.
He is limited. God has been able to limit him. And then Jude 9.
Yet Michael, the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee."
Okay, there's not a lot that we know about the archangel. Michael, there may be some others, but he's specifically mentioned as an archangel. But angels are greater than men. And when you have the idea of archangel, chief angel, and you decide to dispute with him, you think you've got some boldness? Satan's no coward. Now, there will be times where he flees because of a certain drawing nigh to God, as James talked about. But he is a very bold creature. So the idea that he's going to cower and not try to seek as many people as he can, that's simply not true. All right, we've got 5 minutes left and about 7 references, so let's take these quickly. And hopefully you will have already picked one and we can just move right along. 1 Corinthians 10:13. All right, Lisa?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13.
No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure.
Okay, the devil is referred to sometimes in the Bible as a tempter. But God says even though that is one of the things that he does, he's able to deliver his people from temptation. Just as we saw from Revelation 20. He's powerful, but not as powerful as God. James 2, verse 19. Betty?
There is one God, thou dost well. The devil also awakens and trembles.
Okay, Satan's not specifically mentioned here. But we do have some of his helpers mentioned. And what do we learn about his helpers? They believe. They don't have any doubts about God as far as his existence or power. And they tremble. Well, to me, that also seems to be true for Satan. I can't give you a verse that says Satan shudders, Satan trembles. But when you look at how he's been dealt with, he seems to know what's coming. Remember the demons one time talked about, you know, don't send us to that place before the time. So Satan's helpers seem to know what's going on, and by implication, I think we can say that he also shudders, but still, he's going to continue to do his work, bold, brash, and continue to be evil to the greatest degree he can. Mark 4, verse 15. Tina?
And these are they by the wayside, where the word is sown, but when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately and taketh away the word that was sown in their hearts.
Okay, is Satan interested in the scriptures? He is. Here we see his interest as that's planted in the lives of people. Whether we might say, and here I think the emphasis would be on evangelism, but again, it wouldn't be a stretch to also say in the lives of God's people. He wants to take the scriptures away from the lives of people because he knows the power. It's God's power to salvation, and he wants to get that out of the lives of people. Matthew 4, 5, and 6. Glenda? Okay.
Written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee,
and in their hands they shall bear you up. Least of any time you should dash your foot against the stone.
Okay, the scriptures consist of information that Satan's familiar with. Now, I'm not going to develop this thought. Maybe we couldn't go too far with it, but I think it's very interesting. When you deduce from Matthew 4 that Satan has some interest in the scriptures, he has some knowledge of the scriptures, but as you look at his knowledge, as you look at his understanding, would you say that it's full or complete or total? I don't think so, because there were scriptures that predicted his overfall, right? You can start back in Genesis 3 and see several of the passages. So when it comes along and works through Judas and so forth, that he was thinking that he was going to be able to stop Christ, well, the scriptures had said, no, you're not going to succeed. And yet, for some reason, maybe it was his pride, he thought, well, you know, I know what it says. I don't know exactly why, but he should have been able to deduce from the scriptures that he was not going to succeed. So very interesting. Maybe it was just enough knowledge to try to, you know, carry out his will and, you know, convince people to reject them. But some knowledge, but not all knowledge. James 4, 7 and 8. Somebody there that can read that quickly? James 4, 7 and 8. All right. Okay, thanks, Jenny. That tells us that if we're willing to pursue righteousness, the devil will flee from us. That's God's promise. He doesn't want to be close to the people who are trying to follow God and follow the scriptures. Ephesians 4:27. Jeff?
You need to give place to the devil.
Okay, that kind of takes us back to Hebrews 12. We can have that root of bitterness, the root of some other sin, start to form in us, start toying with sin, and the Bible says, don't give place. Don't let him have the smallest chunk of real estate in our heart. Ephesians 6:11. Josh?
Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil.
Okay, we can stand against the devil, Paul says. But to do that, what do we need? The full armor of God. And sometimes people say, well, I like this chunk, I like this piece, but Paul says we need to be fully attired in the armor of God. And then, if you will, Josh, two verses later, verse 13, Ephesians 6.
Therefore, take up the whole armor.